All right, welcome to it. It is today's lunch hour Q&A. We've got Coach Perry, cycling coach, with us today, Devlin Eden. Devlin, welcome, mate. Nice to catch up.
Thanks,
man. Yeah, we don't get to chat often, so it's going to be cool to hang out for the next little bit, and hopefully help a few cyclists. As always, you can ask your questions in the Slack channel that we've created, and I can't for the life remember what it is, so let me just open it up quick. There we go. It's Lunch Hour QA, 28 September 2016. It's in Slack, so go and ask your questions there. I'm not sure sort of how busy it is going to be today, but I've got quite a few questions that I want to ask, so I'm going to get through those, and I think there'll be a lot of value in the recording as well for somebody who wants to listen to this. So, while we've got that channel open, Dev, this is the first time that you've done one of these things, so I don't want to put you too much on the spot, but and let's just sort of introduce you formally, because I don't think we've formally introduced you to the community. Your background, obviously, you've worked with Lindsay quite a bit at the High Performance Center in Pretoria, but tell us a little bit about your background, where you come from, what you're into, and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so, thanks. It's actually really good to be here, and it'd be nice to interact a little bit with the guys. As you mentioned, so worked with Lindsay for a while, so from an intern as a sports scientist, and pretty much, ever since, learned a hell of a lot under Lindsay, and being in this sort of environment, I've always had a passion for cycling. Started out actually with a bit of road cycling, and then after varsity, it just grew into the mountain biking thing, so where my main passion lies. And it's just completely gone on from then. So I do my sort of focus in the cycling area from a scientific point of view is I do everything from the fitness evaluations that we do here at the High Performance Center, and then obviously the training, the coaching, the strength and conditioning, bike setups, the work. So everything that I can do to assist the athlete perform better from a cycling point of view.
Right, cool. And you talk about your interest. You also ride a lot as well. You did the Absa Cape Epic earlier today, your first one. Tough experience. It's not a walk in the park, that baby, is it?
No, definitely not. It was a grueling 80 days, and learnt a lot about my training techniques as well, and learnt a lot about myself. It's definitely one of those character building kind of events, but I absolutely love it. And I've actually was lucky enough last week to secure an entry to go back next year. So I'm heading back again with a slightly different goal. This year was survival. Next year, hopefully, to try and do well and improve on times.
I was going to ask you, Dev, are you going back? But you've answered that question. Gee, sucker for punishment much?
No, definitely. And it's I don't know, you struggle to explain it to people. But it's we all crave that little, as endurance athletes, I think it's almost like a drug. We really do crave it, and we like that hurt.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I mean, we obviously do lots of stuff around comrades and ultra marathons from the running perspective here on Coach Perry as well, and that's the thing. It just it sucks you in, and once you're in, it's just it becomes part of you, and it really sort of becomes sort of all encompassing, and it's everything that you do. So yeah, it's cool. Well, that's awesome news. Actually, I didn't realize that, but that's fantastic. Dev, let's talk. I mean, the floor's open. Obviously, if you've got any questions, get them in on Slack. You can ask the questions there right now as well. But Dev, let's talk power and power meters. I want to know this for me, because I have this deep longing for a power meter, and I've got a funny feeling my life will be complete if I get one. But I'm worried that it's too much gadget. It's almost like having a Formula One car and you only used to riding a little 1100 sort of skedonk. But I almost feel like I'm going to have too much stuff, if you know what I'm saying, that I don't actually need it for the caliber of athlete I am. What's your take on power meters?
Look, Brad, to be quite honest, if I could get all my athletes training on power meter, it would be first prize. So the luxury of having a power meter is it takes a bit of the guesswork out of the training, firstly. Most of us actually train with heart rate monitors and that. And heart rate monitors are a really good tool and a lot more easily accessible than what power meters are. But a lot of us don't take into account the various sort of components that can affect heart rate on any given day. So whether it's been a bad night's sleep, whether we've had a cup of coffee in the morning, if we're just a little bit overtrained, whatever it might be, we don't tend to take that into account. So we have a look at what our heart rate might be sitting a little bit higher than normal on a particular day, and we stress a little bit about that, so we tap off on a training session. And we forgot that we had a cup of coffee 20 minutes before. So it's things like that where the power meter plays a different role. The power meter is you're putting out X amount of watts, so let's call it 300 watts, and if that's what's prescribed, that's what's prescribed. Do you know what I mean? So you don't have that variation that can happen with heart rate. It'll allow you a little bit more accurately as well, sort of see that you are hitting numbers. So we'll be able to pick up in the session whether you are feeling a little bit fatigued, if you're not necessarily hitting the numbers that you should be hitting, that you typically do hit on a general kind of training session. So from that point of view, it's a little bit more focused, a little bit more direct measure of the actual output that you, or the actual work that you're putting out. As you touched on, though, there is a tendency for an information overload. I mean, I'll be the first guy to agree with you. I love gadgets. I ride with a power meter myself on my mountain bike. And for the most part, I use it really well. There are times, though, and again, it depends purely on the kind of terrain you're riding, the kind of session that you are in, where there's a lot of stop-start to it. So then you almost kind of think, well, are you getting the particular session that, well, the goal of the session, you need to plan a little bit better to try and get that out. So for me, I say a power meter is the way to go, as long as you're going to be using it properly. And I think that's where it is key to just sort of get in touch and get a little bit of guidance in terms of the training program. And then more than just you also having to look at a bunch of numbers is to send it on. So let me have a look at the kind of file that you're putting, in a particular training session. Let me look at the files that you're putting out for that session and then be able to analyze it a little bit closely to be able to say, well, Brad, why aren't you hitting those numbers rather in the session, or you're pushing a little bit harder than you should be, tap off, what have you. So I think it's, you've just got to understand why you want the power meter. I think it's a brilliant tool, and it is the way forward in terms of accurate scientific training. And if we're using it to the correct potential, with right testing, with the right training, it then becomes a really good tool when we're racing. So be it on the mountain bike, be it on the road bike, triathlon, whatever it might be, if we've got that as a racing tool, we know really we've got a good indication as to if we're pushing a little bit hard, we're pushing, taking a little too easy, and that sort of thing. So there's a lot we can gain from it, and my recommendation would be definitely the way to go. But don't do it if you're not going to be using it to its full potential. Otherwise, it is just another gadget.
Mm. David, let's talk about the different types, because that's also, I think, one of the things that's confusing me. There's so many, I mean, different brands on the market now. It's that information overload. I'm not quite sure what's the best way to go for me. Talk to us about the different types of power meters you get and sort of what maybe some of the benefits or disadvantages are on each of them.
So on the various brands, look, the best type, so taking brand out of it, so typically when we look at your SRM or your cork power meters, anything that's built into the crank itself, that's going to be your first prize in terms of a power meter. And the reason there being is because that's where the power is being put out. So through pedals, through the crank arms, and the force plates in the crank itself is always going to give you a more accurate reading than what a power meter or the force plates that are built into a rear hub, for instance, which is typically what you'd find as your power tap unit, some of your power tap units that are built into the rear hub. Again, I won't say they're not accurate and they don't work well. So power tap is brilliant. It's been around forever, and they really are good units. But if you start looking in some of the older Polar models as well, they make use of a power meter that runs on tension of the chain. So it's sort of got a little sensor that reads tension of the chain and all that. But then there's a lot more algorithms that go into that and a lot more guesswork, I suppose, if you wish, in terms of giving the actual power output. As I mentioned, the SRM and the cork that's built into into the crank itself is a lot more accurate. The forces are right there, and most of those will give you a good indication of a left leg, right leg balance as well in terms of power output, which is always going to be a good thing when we're trying to train pedal efficiency at the same time, to know that what your left leg versus what your right leg is doing. Some of the newer units are, the stages power meter, which is built in, it's a little pod that's built into the, onto the crank arm on your non-drive side. And again, brilliant power meter and the very accurate. So I ride with the stages myself. Really cool piece of equipment, but they, the downside to that is you've only, it's making an estimation on a left leg, right leg balance. So there it's only really giving you the kind of power that you're putting out in the left leg and assuming that your right leg is going to be pretty similar. So it takes away that accuracy from that point of view. And the nice thing about the stage is that it's so easy to calibrate. You literally turn it on, pedal your crank back once, set it at dead bottom center, and there it's calibrated and ready to go. So from that point of view, I'd look at anything that's built into the crank when you are looking and purchasing a power meter.
It's quite interesting. And from a pricing perspective, I know when they first came on the market, they were pretty expensive. Is that still the case? Is the price coming down? Is it becoming more accessible or not? Not really.
They are to a degree. And look, you're still going to pay for, so anything that you're talking about, your power taps, for instance, your SRM bank system, those are generally still expensive. The prices have come down a little bit more accessible, but there are still some of your more pricey ranges. I actually forgot to mention now, there's also, I'm actually completely going blank as to who does them. In fact, I want to say it's Garmin does a power pedal. So the pedal's now your power meter as well. So both sides of the pedal have got a power meter and force plates built into those. So those are also really cool piece of equipment and accurate power meters. And again, that's directly where the power is being put into. So from your legs and your feet straight down into the pedal itself. And there you're also looking a little bit cheaper than what your crank ranges are, but there I think you're still sitting anything between 15 and 20,000. And then obviously when we start talking the stages, the stages now are probably coming to the market really well from a price range and an accessibility. So again, when we start talking, depends on what you're referring to as cheap, but they are definitely the cheaper models on the market when you start looking at the stages crank sets or crank arms and that. So a lot more accessible to people these days, and I do think over time there's always new advancements to technology, and they are always looking for a way to get more people on them and get them a little bit cheaper. So I think prices will come down a little bit over time. And I mean, we've seen it to some degree already, as there's more and more power meters that are entering into the market as well.
Yeah, you know, one thing we've also, I think, has highlighted this, Dev, is if you look at sort of, if you go to a gym, if you go to your local gym like a Virgin Active or something, a lot of those gyms are transitioning to sort of watt bikes and bikes that have power built in. If you can't afford a power meter, is it worthwhile going to the gym and sitting on a watt bike as you would possibly on a on your indoor trainer? Or do you, if ideally, do you want one yourself, essentially?
Look, Brad, I'm actually glad you asked that. So, to be quite honest, I'm a big fan of the watt bike. So, I do most of my quality sessions on the watt bike. So, it also, the nice thing there is that it helps with time as well. So, if I've got an hour spare, I'll do my quality work on the watt bike. The watt bike gives you great feedback. The power meter there doesn't need calibration. It's ready to go. It's accurate. It gives you feedback again on left leg, right leg balance. It gives you a little graph, which we numb the peanut, which basically gives you again your pedal efficiency that you're putting out in the pedal stroke. There's a lot of information and valuable information you can get from the white bike. They're relatively comfortable to ride as well. So I'm a huge advocate for them, and I do definitely think that there's a way to go, and especially when we're talking quality. So if we're doing long endurance rides and long easy LSD type of rides, there, being out on your bike and not necessarily having the power meter, you can get away with it because you know what your heart rate needs to do, you know what your body feels like on an easy ride. But if we're doing the high intensity interval sessions and you're having to do 3 minutes or 2 minutes or 1 minute and you need to be hitting 400 or 500 watts, having that feedback is brilliant, and you've got it there. Most of us are gym members, and most of the gyms now have the Watt Bike. There are a lot of Watt Bike studios as well. And then, so I mean, we're branding, we're obviously going with the Watt Bike, but there are a couple of other studios out as well. So I know Cadence Studio, for instance, makes use of the, I actually want to say it is the Optimum Cadence bikes. So there are other bikes as well that do exactly the same sort of thing. So from that point of view, stationary bikes work well. They've got the power meters in them. You've got all the information that you typically would have. So I think that's a viable option. And then the next option to that as well, and I forgot to mention it from a power meter point of view, is things like your Wahoo Kicker. The Wahoo Kicker is your back wheel. You need to just put a new cassette on that. You take the back wheel of your bike, put the bike onto the kicker, and your bike becomes the power meter. So it's an indoor trainer. It can be connected up to any software. I don't know if you've seen the Zwift software as well, which is pretty much a virtual reality type of riding. Can be connected up to that, gives you all the tests, can give you training information as well. You can do everything on that as though you've got a power meter. And the brilliant thing there is you're still riding your own bike, which is always going to be a plus.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you that. That, for me, is one of the big things, too, is as much as the Watt bikes are convenient and it's built in and you have to buy the thing yourself, surely there is the risk of you doing a lot of your training on a bike that yes, you are setting it up to sort of your dimensions, but it's not possibly a bike that you've gone and had a proper setup where angles have been measured and you're on exactly the right sort of fit for you. Is there a risk in doing that? Again, it's probably first prize doing it on your own bike, but if that's all you've got access to, a Watt bike's going to work just as well.
Correct, and hopefully most of the gyms, look, we've got a studio and I do the sort of fitting itself, so I'm not sure exactly how the gyms operate, but I'm hoping that there is some sort of instructor that will give some sort of indication on setup of the Watt bike itself. If you don't have that access to someone there that knows what they're looking for when setting up the Watt bike, then take the dimensions of your bike. They're not going to be spot on, but they're going to be as close as anything. But take the dimensions from your bike in terms of saddle, from saddle to handle reach, in terms of the saddle fore aft position, so how far back or how far forward the saddle is, and then obviously the saddle height as well. So if you take that, you set that up on the Watt bike, the nice thing about the Watt bike is it does then have measurement units on it. So once you set it up the first time, you can remember where all those measurements are, and that'll be the same setting every time you get to it. There is always a risk. Obviously, it isn't your bike. If you're a road cyclist and you have your road shoes and your road pedals, I don't know what the policies in the gyms are, but what I allow my clients to do is basically the guys will come in and they'll put their own pedals on the bike. So they're at least still riding in their cleats with their pedals. And then the bike comes standard with the normal Shimano cleat, the typical mountain bike cleat, which most of your spinning bikes in any gyms have. So a lot of guys have the shoes and the cleats ready for that at least. So yes, there's always going to be that side of things and the risk to it. But again, I just feel when we start talking convenience and if it is set up properly, your high intensity intervals take typically an hour, at very most an hour and a half. So those kind of sessions are getting done there. Most of your long rides and where you're spending time in the saddle, you're still doing on your own bike and being out on the road or out on the trails. So from that side of thing, that I don't think that you're losing anything that you typically would be on your own bike as long as you set up properly and you're making sure you're not getting injured or picking up negligence. And on saying that, we just need to also be honest with ourselves. So if you start feeling, if you're on the Watt bike, if you start feeling a bit of knee pain, for instance, don't try and push through it. So it's like anything, the same as on your bike. You need to stop and we need to sort of suss out what might be the issue.
Yeah, that's, as athletes, I think that's something we're all guilty of as well. And then, Dev, as far as, is there a difference? Like, do you need, are there different requirements if you ride a mountain bike or a road bike or if you're into triathlon? Would it work the same across all three of those, or would you need something slightly different for each?
Sorry, Brad, just what are we referring to? From a
gear perspective, would it be the same sort of thing across all three?
Yeah. So look, when we're talking power meters for obviously the power meters are all specific to the type of bike. So if you're talking a hub power meter, your hub needs to be compatible with either a road wheel or a mountain bike wheel. And the wheel then needs to be built onto that hub itself. So that means new spokes, where you'll be able to use the same rim, but obviously it's the spokes that'll go into that. When we start talking cranks, it's going to be the same. So it won't be bike specific in terms of, actually even brands will be quite specific. So if you look at Specialized versus Cannondale, the different crank systems and size of the BBs and all that sort of stuff. So it is going to be specific to either mountain bike, road bike, or triathlon bike, and then at the same time, brand to brand. But there are the various options out there for each brand. So whether you're looking at a mountain bike power meter, so whether it's in the rear hub or built into the crank, there are all the options for all of the above on that as well.
All right, cool. That's good to know too. And then, Dev, from a numbers perspective, you mentioned it's like information overload. What are some of the, obviously there is so much info that you can glean from having one of these things, but what are some of the key things you want to be looking out for if you are training with power? What's the sort of essential? Like, you know what, if the only thing you look at is this is what you need to look at.
So firstly on this, my suggestion would be to have some sort of baseline testing. So whether you're going to do a full-on go-to assessment that will have power built into that and you're working lactate threshold points in the works, or whether it's a basic functional threshold power test, so an FTP, which is a 20-minute time trial in essence. The idea there is we're setting a baseline so we know where your threshold is, and set up training zones based on that. So that's first prize. Well, that's key. You need to have a basis. You're not working completely blind. Then from there, I would say depends purely on, well, firstly, what the program prescribes. So if the program prescribes you to work in a range of 260 to 310 watts, for instance, then your actual wattage, so not the average watts over that interval piece, the actual wattage that you're putting out needs to sit in that range. So that's going to then be program or session specific, so that you are watching the actual watts that you're putting out. Over a long ride or over a ride typically or an overall session, what a lot of guys will do then is there's a function called normalized power. So normalized power is basically a smoothed out graph. So instead of, if you look, each pedal stroke is going to be slightly different. So especially when we start talking things like mountain biking, where there's a little bit of stop-start. But even from a road point of view, you're riding in the bunch, you're freewheeling a little bit, you're pushing a little bit harder up, down, that sort of thing. You get a lot of outlier spikes in the data and in the graphs. So what the normalized power does is it averages that out. So if I'm not mistaken, I think it takes a 15 or 30-second average over the entire session. So smooth the data a little bit better. So it's not for that session. It just smooths the data out. So it allows you to get more of an indication as to what you're doing without those huge outliers in the graph, if that makes any sense. So a lot of guys it's actually really good to then train on normalized power, purely because then again, if I'm asking you to be on between a particular zone and you consider that normalized power, it makes it easier for you to maintain that rather than if anyone's ridden a white bike, you'll see it firsthand, where if you need to sit at 300 watts, for instance, it's actually really difficult to sit at 300 watts because it's always going to jump 320, then 290 and whatever. So it jumps up quite a lot. And that's where the normalized power helps. So my big thing would be to make sure that you're staying in the zones that are prescribed, focusing on things like your normalized power, and then a good indication of that, and that's what's set up by your FTP or your functional threshold power, especially when we start doing race planning, is something that we call the intensity factor. So again, that gives us an indication of an intensity factor of 1.0, for instance, or 100% is basically your FTP value, which is threshold. And for most of it, especially when we start talking long rides, so ultra marathon type distances, and more so even into stage racing, for you to be sitting at or above that threshold, you're going to start fatiguing a lot quicker and you're going to start hitting a wall a lot sooner. Where we can then plan your race strategy that you are sitting at 85% of threshold instead. And you'll be able to maintain that intensity for a lot longer. And you'll see it's quite interesting. Then you need to actually be strict to follow that. And you'll see later on in the race how often you actually start stopping people that have gone out too hard and hit the wall, whereas you've been able to sustain an intensity for a lot longer. So it just helps a lot there as well, your intensity factor, when it comes to planning racing itself and your race strategy.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, Dev, because and particularly the longer you go and the more, like you talk about the multi-day stage races, I think that's probably more than anything when it does come into play, is when you almost do need to conserve for later. And that, for me, is probably the reason why I'm interested in getting one, not so much just from a cycling perspective, but from a triathlon perspective, where if you're sticking to those numbers that you know you can stick to and you're not going to fatigue too badly and you're not going to hit the wall, it sets you up for a much better run. And it's the same thing with a multi-day stage race, that if you go and burn all your biscuits on day one, the rest of it's going to be really hard. But if you stick within those zones that you know you can do, and I'm not saying doing it comfortably, but where you're not going to blow yourself up, it does make it a lot easier to sort of from a body management perspective later on in the race or later on in the week or however long the race is that you do it.
Without a doubt. And I mean, Brad, we always talk about, we mentioned planning and that's ultimately what it comes down to. So you know in all your preparation what you're able to sustain, how long you can go for X amount of watts, for instance. And once the planning comes down into the race strategy, it helps a hell of a lot. So as you mentioned, sort of saving yourself before a run, knowing that, and that's exactly where something like that intensity factor comes in. You know that if you keep it an intensity factor of 85%, for instance, you're going to be able to get off a lot of pressure when it comes to running on the road afterwards. And the same thing with the multi-day stage races, and I've seen it firsthand. The thing with the multi-day stage race, for instance, is now having the discipline to actually stick to your race strategy. And I suppose that's in any race, really, because the rest of the bunch will go up the road, and now you think, okay, well, do I have the discipline to stick to my race strategy? Because I know 3 or 4 days down the line, those guys are going to be bonking a lot quicker, and I've still got some left in the tank to start making up places in GC. Whereas, and even in a single day race, the guys are going to go out too hard, and that tends to happen more often than not. So it's just sticking to your race plan, knowing what you need to do, and later in the race is when you start reeling everyone back that's gone out too hard. And that's where your tool like this helps a hell of a lot.
Yeah, absolutely, Dev. I think you've convinced me. I'm just not 100% sure yet which one I want, but I definitely will be going shopping soon. I can tell you that much. I might be picking your brain again at some other stage. But yeah, I think that's a pretty cool sort of overview of power and what you can use it for and what you could possibly do. I think in later sessions we probably will go deeper into it and look at specific numbers and what you should be aiming for and what you should and shouldn't be doing. But yeah, Dev, I think that's pretty much it for today's lunch hour Q&A. I think somebody listening to this as a recording afterwards, if they're interested in power, are going to get tons out of it. And as always, if they're looking for individualized coaching, they can head over to coachperry.com and sort of look you up on that website. Coaching packages are there, and it's across the board. So if it's sort of like one-day classics like a 94.7 or a Cape Town Cycle Tour, we can help. Or if it's multi-day stage races, whether it be the Jock or if it's the Cape Epic, it doesn't really matter. We've got something that can help you out, and you want to make sure that it's all customized for you, and that's exactly what Dev does. So, Dev, thanks for your time today. Much appreciated. We'll catch up with you in Slack, and look forward to chatting more about power and power meters and cycling and that in the weeks and months to come here on Coach Perry.
Cool, great. Thanks a lot. It's been good.